If you grew up in Michigan, you studied history books showing images of slavery, black men, women, and children picking cotton in the South. Michigan, we learned, was an important part of the Underground Railroad, helping African Americans across the border to freedom in Canada. But what we weren't taught was this: slavery helped build Detroit. Some of the best-known names used today for roads, counties, cities, and schools around Southeast Michigan belong to old families who owned slaves. Bill McGraw dug into Detroit's big bad secret for Deadline Detroit. Good to have you here, Bill.
Same here. Thank you.
What is the reaction you've gotten as people read your story and discover slavery was thriving in Detroit right from the beginning?
It's always a surprise, because even well-informed, well-educated people never happened to learn that slavery existed in Detroit for about 120 years. So when you think of it, slavery lasted longer than the auto industry has lasted so far. Now, the auto industry is going to pass it pretty soon. But anyways, yeah, it was a long-time established aspect of life in Detroit.
And in fact, actually, it preceded the French, because the native tribes owned slaves, but their concept of slave differed from the European, right?
Very different. And that's when the French did come into the Great Lakes area in the 1600s, they encountered the Indians with a much different lifestyle, obviously, and a total different way of thinking. And slavery also was very different. For them, slaves weren't property. Slaves served like ceremonial and almost spiritual purposes. So, for instance, if a member of your tribe had been killed in battle, you had to go and find someone to replace that warrior, and you would take a slave from another tribe or the tribe that killed your warrior. And then that slave would go through a long initiation, and I might add, extremely painful initiation process. Torture was involved, very systematic and very, very grievous torture. And then they would become part of a family. It was a very elaborate thing, but they weren't considered property. And sometimes those slaves could exit slavery, unlike the African-American slaves in America, who were slaves for life, as were their children. A slave in Native culture could someday no longer be a slave. So it was very, very different. And they also were used for gift giving. Tribes would give gifts to help cement alliances and things like that. So very, very different than the European concept of slavery.
So in come the French with that concept of black slavery coming to North America and to Michigan. And we got kind of a hybrid.
Eventually, it kind of seemed to become a hybrid, but they brought over their sense of what slavery was. And for many years in this part of the country, for instance, in Detroit, the vast majority of slaves over that 120 years were native slaves. There were black slaves. They came a little bit later in the process after the British took over and in the early American era of Detroit. But during the French period, they were especially mostly native slaves. And so the native slaves then would become slaves, but slaves in the European sense. And they became property. And eventually, people in Montreal, which was the most prosperous city in New France, wanted slaves to be their, you know, household people and things like that. And that's what happened in Detroit. The slaves here generally helped out on the small farms in Detroit and worked in people's homes or even in their offices. Joseph Campo, the famous namesake of the street in Hamtramck in Detroit, he was a huge landowner in Detroit in the late 1700s. One of his slaves was his bookkeeper. So Detroit wasn't South Carolina, let's say. You know, the biggest slave owner in Detroit had 26 slaves, where I think Thomas Jefferson had 600 slaves during his lifetime. So it was very different.
I'm speaking with writer Bill McGraw, who dug into the secret of Detroit slavery. Many of us unaware that slavery really helped to build Detroit. It was a story he did for Deadline Detroit. And you really did dig up some well-known names of slave owners. One that really jumped out at me was William Macomb, the richest man in Detroit when he died in 1796. Tell us what you found in his will.
Well, he's a really interesting case because, of course, he's a very well-known name. There's streets, there's a county named after him. He, with 26 slaves, was probably the person who owned the most slaves in Detroit's history. And he died in, I believe, 1796, in the mid-1790s. And when he died, he was so rich, he owned, for instance, at one time, both Groseal and Belle Isle and much other land. And he had a beautiful estate/farm roughly around where Joe Louis Arena is today. And it extended backwards into the backcountry towards Midtown. And so when he died, he left this a very interesting book, like a ledger, and it's thick with probably dozens and dozens of pages with everything he owned, all his books, all his animals, all his materials for farming, his tools, and his slaves. And so listed in there, just along with all this literal property, was his human property. And so that book still exists today. It's one of the only artifacts that's left over from the slavery period, and it's in the Burton Collection at the Detroit Library. With supervision, you can ask for it, and they'll open it. It's obviously over 200 years old, and it's very stark when you see it, the listing of people's names, only for the most part first names, too. The slaves didn't have last names, and then how much the value of them was at the time he died, just like his tools and his horses.
And as you point out in your piece, that beautiful copper plate calligraphy that they wrote in to see that evidence of slavery in that exquisite handwriting is very jarring, I bet.
Yes, yep. And the Burton has a few other artifacts that are paper artifacts, not quite like this book, that also are very stark, like receipts for the sale of slaves and things like that. So nobody quibbles that slavery did exist.
Bill, why is it that there's this collective amnesia when it comes to Detroit's slave-owning past?
Well, you know, first of all, it's just not Detroit. I think it's slavery in general. Obviously, people are very, very aware of slavery in the South because of the Civil War and everything that came afterwards. But in Canada, for instance, Ontario and Quebec, there were slaves there also, especially in Montreal and Quebec City, because Detroit was part of New France, just like those cities were. And there's been a collective amnesia in Canada also. And there's also been a collective amnesia in places in the North that had slavery, New York City being the best example. Now, about 20 years ago, an old graveyard was dug up in Manhattan when they were digging a building, and they found that it was a graveyard for slaves. And that kicked off, New York being New York, museum exhibitions, books, articles, debates, all about New York's slavery history, which was very involved with the banking, insuring slave ships, and the actual holding of slaves in New York in the 1600s and 1700s. So that's a long way of saying Detroit's not unique. But I think it has to do with slavery evolved into such a horrible sin of America that virtually everyone agrees upon and has agreed upon for the last at least half a century or so. And also, for many years, there was kind of a boosterish quality to historical writing, which, of course, has gone by the wayside over the last couple of generations.
Kind of rah-rah.
Exactly. And especially when it came to Detroit, with Detroit's history, with 1900 and the birth of the auto industry, and Detroit became this just amazing city that people, you know, wanted to celebrate in a lot of ways. So I think you would have been seen as really kind of the party pooper if you were a historian and you wrote about this, because virtually no one did. You know, there's a few exceptions, but, you know, more in recent years with the way the study of history has become much more critical, there's been a more critical eye applied to things like slavery.
What are your thoughts as you studied this and you see these documents at the Burton Historical Collection and dug into the history of slavery in Michigan? How did slavery, do you think, impact race relations as Detroit grew and developed, and are the ripple effects being felt today?
I think that's a really great question, and I don't know the answer to that, but because when you really think about it, the problems that Detroit has had, two riots in the last 70 years or so, the problems of segregation in Metro Detroit, they're not that much different than other big northern cities in America. We might have a higher rate of segregation in Metro Detroit, but it's only decimal points different than that in Chicago and Cleveland. So I think Detroit is so much a part of America, especially the American cities in the north, like Chicago didn't have slavery, and I don't think Cleveland did either. Yet, you know, history or the Detroit's existence is a linear thing. It started when the Europeans arrived in 1701, at least. And so you've got to sort of understand that that was part of the DNA of people in the, say, 1830s. Slavery didn't exist anymore in the 1830s, but people's grandparents and parents even had owned slavery. And so how did that get passed along? And especially I think it's interesting for what it meant for, say, the mid-19th century, when, as I also wrote, during the Civil War, you know, Detroit did have an underground railroad. It was the terminus of the underground railroad for slaves escaping to Canada. But Detroit also was filled with people who were against the freeing of slaves, including the free press. The liberal free press of the 21st and 20th century was a very different paper in the 19th century and basically argued against freeing the slaves.
So what does uncovering this hidden secret of Detroit slavery mean for us right now in 2014, do you think?
I think it's important to be truthful about the past. It's one thing to have amnesia in sort of a passive way, like people who grew up in Detroit who didn't know about slavery, you can't fault them. Mm-hmm. But I think who's the villain here? Is it some historian in 1870 who didn't write about it? So there's no villains as far as covering up slavery, but the fact that it's been unearthed by both myself and some other people, now that it's there, I think it does need to be explored so that people have a much truer nature of what it meant to be a black person in Detroit over the centuries or a Native American person in Detroit over the centuries. And I just think it's that kind of transparency and fresh air is always good for sort of policy debates at this day and age, looking backwards. And, you know, over the last, say, 15 years or so, a lot of different institutions and organizations have looked at their past and analyzed what role they might have had in slavery, especially in the East. Brown University, Yale, and Princeton, those received a lot of funding in the 19th century from slave-owning families. New York City is another one that really examined what it meant to be a slave-owning capital of the North in America. And that definitely hasn't happened in Detroit. You know, I worked at the Free Press for a long time, but I fault the Free Press for not really coming to terms with its past also, where there's a lot of other newspapers in America, especially in the South, that have looked at what they did and come clean.
On their mea culpas?
I don't even know if you have to do a mea culpa as much as say, hey, here's what we were like in whatever, 1860s, 1850s, or even for these papers in the South in the 1960s. They've come clean with readers about what they were like during the Civil Rights Revolution.
An interesting, interesting story by Bill McGraw. Slavery is Detroit's big, bad secret. Why don't we know anything about it? It's at DeadlineDetroit.com, and we have put up a link on the stateside page. Just go to MichiganRadio.org. Bill McGraw, pleasure to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.